Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. On this 11th day of December 2012 in Los Angeles, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 7, verse number 11. Iti uktas tam vihayendro devasher manayan vachaha ananta priya bhaktyainam parikramya divam yayao ityuktas tam vihayendro Devarshi manayan vachaha ananta priya bhaktyainam parikramya divangyayao ityuktastham vihayendro Devarshi manayan vachaha ananta priya bhaktyainam Parikramya divangyayao ityuktastham vihayendro devasher manayan vachaha ananta priya bhaktyainam parikramya divangyayao vihayendro Devasher manayan vachaha ananta priya bhaktyainam parikramya divangyayao Devasher manayan vachaha ananta priya bhaktyainam Parikramya divangaya. Ladies? Ityuktastham vihayendro devasher manayan vachaha ananta priya bhaktyainam parikramya divangayao ityuktastham vihayendro Devasher manayan vachaha ananta priya bhaktyainam parikramya divangyayao iti thus uktaha addressed tam her vihaya releasing indraha The King of Heaven, Deva Rishi, of the Saint Narada Muni, Manayan, honoring, Vachaha, the words, Ananta Priya, for one who is very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhaktya, by devotion, Enam, this woman, Parikramya, circumambulating, divam, to the heavenly planets, yayao, returned. Translation, when the great saint Narada Muni had thus spoken, King Indra, being respectful to Narada's words, immediately released my mother. Because of my being a devotee of the Lord, all the demigods circumambulated her. Then they returned to their celestial kingdom. Please repeat. When the great saint Narada Muni had thus spoken, King Indra, being respectful to Narada's words, immediately released my mother. Because of my being a devotee of the Lord, All the demigods circumambulated her. Then they returned to their celestial kingdom. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Although King Indra and the other demigods are exalted personalities, they were so obedient to Narada Muni that King Indra immediately accepted Narada Muni's words concerning Prahlad Maharaj. This is called understanding by the parampara system. Indra and the demigods did not know that a great devotee was in the womb of Kayadhu, the wife of Hiranyakashipu. But they accepted the authoritative statements of Narada Muni and immediately offered their respects to the devotee by circumambulating the woman in whose womb he was living. To understand God and the devotee of the devotee by the parampara system is the process of knowledge. I'll read that again. To understand God and the devotee by the parampara system is the process of knowledge. There is no need to speculate about God and his devotee. One should accept the statements of a bona fide devotee and thus try to understand. Om jnana tamarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshu unmilitam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So just to set the scene, Hiranyakashipu has gone off to practice severe austerities in order to become so powerful that he would be immortal, he hopes, and that he would be able to kill Vishnu, who had killed his brother Hiranyaksha. So the demigods took advantage of his absence, and they come and conquered their heavenly kingdom again, which they had to vacate. And Kayadhu, Hiranyakashipu's wife, is there, and she's pregnant. So the demigods, of course, they're not going to kill the woman, but they're thinking that they would arrest her and wait until Prahlad is born, and then I assume they would try to kill Prahlad because he was the descendant of Hiranyakashipu. So Narada Muni appears on the scene, as he often does, and he speaks to the demigods, and he tells them that, no, this is you're mistaken. This is not a demon in the womb here. This is a great devotee. You won't be able to kill him anyway. And so they accept that, words of Narada, and now they circumambulate Kayadhu, in whose womb Prahlad is there, and they return to their heavenly planets. So there's several interesting principles here. First of all, just contemplate the wonderful way in which Narada Muni appears constantly throughout the Bhagavatam. When you think about it, his appearance is always essential to moving everything along. He first appears in the fifth chapter of the first canto when Vyasadeva is in distress. You remember that? And he Vyasadeva didn't know why. He didn't feel satisfied after writing all these Vedic literatures. He'd written the Mahabharata, he'd written the Upanishads, the Vedas, the Vedanta Sutra, and still something was missing, you know. So Narada Muni came and instructed him that you haven't sufficiently glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his incarnations, his devotees, and the process of devotional service. So the Bhagavatam grew out of that instruction, a very essential appearance of Narada. He also appears, of course, to Dhruva Maharaj, who is going out to the forest looking for God. If he hadn't met Narada, what was he going to do out there? But Narada instructed him and on the process of severe austerity, but simultaneous with meditation, chanting the holy name, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and we know the story. In many other places he appears in Krishna Leela in the 10th canto, isn't he? And he instructs Kamsa that all these, you know, cowards are actually yadus. I mean, they're actually demigods come and Krishna's come and he's going to kill you. And so that moves things along, and Kamsa arrests the Vasudeva and Devaki again, and he starts his persecutions. So Narada Muni is an essential figure. Of course, one of the Mahajans, and actually the first recipient, isn't it, of the teachings that Brahma received in the heart from Krishna. He passed them on to Narada, Narada passed them on to Vyasadeva, and they've come down to us. So Prabhupada speaks here about this authoritative statements of the parampara. So this idea of the knowledge coming down through parampara, this is essential. Srila Prabhupada emphasizes it so much. Because the knowledge that we are approaching when we try to inquire about self-realization or about God or about anything that's beyond our purview, we're truly we're blind. We have no access by our ordinary means of investigation. The modern world is so enamored of science as the way of getting knowledge and truth that they poo-poo this kind of approach, because their assumption is that everybody's fallible. We're fallible. Everybody's fallible. Therefore, what can we know of these things? And they say that ultimately there isn't anything. There's nothing beyond it, because we have never seen or heard of or weighed or seen any evidence of God or the soul or so many things. So you have, who's this guy, Hawkins, the great scientist who's so crippled, you know, saying, let's face it, you know, we're all just lumps of flesh, you know, that's all there is. He says, like, this guy has so much influence. Just imagine, you know, when I was in, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, I idolized, Einstein and all of these scientists. They were the source of knowledge. They were so wise, right? So the influence that these demons have on people who are helpless before, you know, the propaganda machine of Maya is very great. And Srila Prabhupada's mission was to break down, to combat this false propaganda that the only way of knowing things is through our senses and our mind, our intelligence, and there's no other way. So this is the first thing that we actually have to accept. Just as Arjuna, when you go and you begin the Bhagavad Gita, in that first chapter, he's going back and forth. He's actually thinking, you know, like this gut reaction, right? His feeling is that when this critical moment, when the battle is joined practically, and everyone is just about to join the battle, he has cold feet. Because he sees his beloved guru there, you know, his teacher, Dronacharya, and Bhishma Dev, and so many relatives. And he's soft-hearted. He's a devotee. So he doesn't want to kill them. Who cares about this kingdom, he says. It'll be tainted with blood. You know, for those who we want to enjoy it with, we'll have to kill. I'll just go to the forest and meditate. You know, that was his. And he had an argument from the Vedas, as Krishna says when he begins his instruction: "You're speaking learned words, but you're actually a fool. You're lamenting for what's not worthy of grief." But who can possibly come to that conclusion that the body that when my beloved husband, wife, child, grandfather, friend, countryman dies, that's not worthy of grief? That to be completely overwhelmed by that illusion of grief is a huge mistake. Everyone will say, you're crazy. You know, this is what I live for. You know, and now my beloved has died in an auto crash, and you're saying I shouldn't feel lamenting. You see, this is you know, the material frame of mind. It's very powerful. So Arjun, being wise, being a devotee, came to the conclusion that this is not going to help. Because Krishna said, what do you know, give up this weakness of heart, stand up and fight. You know, how did this come about? You know? And so Arjuna is torn. This is the critical factor. Most people are not torn. They're completely fixed in their illusory conception of life. But when we begin to be a little confused and we can't really become happy in this world and we feel that there's a existential dilemma, you know, and our lives are on the line, that's, if we're fortunate at that time to come in touch with a bona fide member of the parampara, you know, Arjuna had the advantage of speaking directly to Krishna. But anyone who's, if you forgive the word, channeling Krishna purely, then he can also enlighten us. So Arjuna says, Karpanya dosha bahatasa bhava, pachamitam dharma samudacheta. I am dharma samudacheta. I don't know what the right thing is to do. I don't know what the right thing is to do. So I'm you know, beset by this miserly weakness. So please, you tell me now. I am your disciple now. Tell me for certain what's best for me. Now, in this present case, we have a perfectly bona fide member of the Parampara, Narada Muni, appearing. Indra, he always takes this role. Now, you know, he was right. They captured their kingdom back. But now they're going to make a big mistake if they arrest Kayadu. You know, this is where they're making a big mistake. Narada appears on the scene, and they accept his words. That acceptance of the words is the key difference between the demons and the demigods. Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, the demon, you can tell the demons when you give them good instruction, they become angry at you. Right? And they rarely, may even attack you physically. Right? They don't want to hear it. Because actually, you know, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is extremely revolutionary. It undermines the entire basis of the whole material life, of which the mnemonic mood is the epitome, right? To be, what is it? What is that verse? Ishwaroham mahambogi, ksidoham balamansuki. I was thinking of the other one that where the demons declare there is no truth, there is no foundation. How's it start? Asatyam apadishtam te, jagadahu anishwaram apadaspadasambhutam, kimanyakamahoitakam. This is practically the mission statement, you know, of the demons. There's no ultimate truth out there, you know. There's no foundation of being. They declare, they don't just doubt, they're not agnostics. They're atheists, which means they declare there is no absolute truth. Jagadahu anishwaram, ahu means they declare it. Then how did everything come about? Well, just by chance, combination of the molecules and the atoms over many billions and trillions of years produce all of this that you see. So, of course, when you really believe that, it undercuts any ultimate foundation for morality. And this clears the way for Ishwara Mahambogi. I'm the controller. I'm the master. I'm the perfect, powerful, and happy. So we see this everywhere. We just had this election, you know. It was a festival of Ishwaroham Mahambogi Siddhoham Balabhadi. Such nonsense. So Arjun, he accepted his position as he couldn't figure it out. Dharma Samudha Cheta. So he goes to the proper authority. He accepts Krishna now not as a friend, arguing back and forth, but as a guru, as the source of absolute knowledge. And so he trusts him. You tell me for certain what's best for me. Is it? I accept you as my guru did. So that acceptance of first that there is such a thing as knowledge beyond our ken, by which we can achieve ultimate good, and that there is a repository of it, you know, that we can go to, and then to choose the right source. That's the key relationship for us to progress in devotional life. Now, since the theme here is approaching the ultimate source of knowledge, a member of the parampara, for achieving the ultimate good. In this case, the demigods, you know, accepted that, and the story will go on. Pallad will be born. You know the whole story. But this principle, as Prabhupada spoke about it so often, and so many verses that he has, and one that I've been studying, these teachings of the nine yogendras to the Maharaj Nimi. So this famous verse, Tasmat Gurum Papadeta Jigyashu Shreya Uttamam, Prabhupada would quote all the time as one of the verses that is imperative for us, that tells us from the Bhagavatam that it's imperative to approach a proper guru. So I was puzzled. I don't know if I mentioned this last time I was here. But the verse begins with Tasmat. So that means that there's an argument before that. In other words, if you say therefore, there's some reason for it. So Prabhuda, it's Prabhuda speaking. He's one of the nine yogendras. So he's showing in three verses, he explains why there's no happiness on the earth planet, on this plane, or on the heavenly planets. So he starts out, he says, Kamanyabhadamananam dukha hatyai sukhayacha. He says one should look around and see that people who are simply mitunichadinam means they've gotten together, man and woman, you know, just for materialistic life. It's mitunichadinam. That they engage in so many activities for two reasons. To get rid of dukkha, misery, dukkha hatyai, and sukhaya cha, and to become happy. But one should see that in the end, paka, when everything is cooked, you know, that they get just the opposite. One should see that. And he goes on to explain, nityadi dena vittena dulabe matna vityana. In order to engage in these activities, there's a hard struggle for existence, which means basically trying to get some money. Vitta. And in nityarti dena, which is always giving so much misery, in the getting of it, in the trying to keep it, in the spending it. Black Friday, they just had, right, a few weeks ago, isn't it? The people that they're lining up, you know, the night before, they forget about the Thanksgiving dinner, you know, the Monday before, that some of them. And Best Buy, you know, I gotta have that TV, I can get it half off, right? Thousands of people waiting. You know, they're in that fever of getting and spending and enjoying. Yishuro hamahambogi, you know. So getting the money is trouble. Many of them, you know, can't have the job. I'm only working part time. You know, my mortgage is due. It's such a a thing. And then now we can spend it to try to get. But now they have to fight off somebody else. Sometimes they get trampled. They get there, it's not there. You know, they get it home, it's broken, or it's not broken, but it breaks soon, or it doesn't fulfill my desires. This is what happens, right? So he says, nityarti dena, vittena. And it's very difficult to get. Durlabhain and atma mrityuna. Very interesting word. Atma mrityuna means this fever of getting money and spending is death for the soul. Atma mrityuna. Is it? And then he says, what can you buy with it? Griha patyatma pashubhi. He gives a little list here. Okay, the household, maintain the relatives, pashubi means the animals, we could add, you know, vehicles, you know, all these things. Ka priti sadhitais chalai. You know, how can there be any satisfaction in such things, which are so difficult to get? Sadhit and chalai means that they're flickering. They come and they go, they break, someone steals them, you change, you don't like it anymore. So that's two verses he's kind of put down the whole endeavor. It's very nice. And then he says, I forget the exact Sanskrit here, but he says, and now what about the heavenly planets? So the heavenly planets are also achieved through karma. In other words, this is all materialistic activity. So since they're achieved through karma, they're also temporary. And there's also rivalry up there, you know? You know, Indra's the big honcho up there, and you're just a lesser god or enjoyer, you know. And of course it's temporary and like that. So ultimately there's no difference. And it's destroyed, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, so plain. Tasmad gurum papadjeta jigyashu shreya uttamam. Therefore, if you want the ultimate shreya in your life, means welfare, happiness, without any downside, you know, you have to approach a guru. Who's the guru? Shabde padeta nishnatam brahman nubhishamashri. So he says, here's a compact definition. Two aspects of the supreme, of the absolute truth, such a person has to be fixed in. Shabde and Pare. It's explained by Sridhar Swami in his commentary that Shabde means the Shastra. So fixed in the Shastra means knowing it and living it. Both has to be there. It can't be just some academic knowledge, you know. You have to know the principles of Shastra and fixed in the principles of Shastra. And that's one aspect of absolute truth. And pare. Pare means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme One. In other words, fixed in devotion. And what about the other quality? Upashamashyam means completely free of material desire. It means, upashama means rejecting all material things. So that's the kind of person you have to search out. Then what happens? This next verse is not so famous, but it's very interesting. Tattva Bhagavatam Dharma. After all, speaking of Bhagavad Dharma here, you know, the science of Krishna consciousness. Tatra, there in the presence of the Guru, you know. Now in the presence of the Guru means in contact with the Guru's words. Of course there has to be some personal contact, but in this day and age, you know, always the most essential aspect is the word. So there at the Guru's feet, if you will, Tatra Bhagavatam Dharman Shikshed Gurvatma Daivata. Now this Gurvatma Daivata phrase appears again in the famous verse about the fear, you know, how fear comes about. We'll deal with that in a minute. So Gurvatma Daivata. There one should learn Bhagavad Dharma. this study, this understanding, hearing the Shastra, studying, discussing. So that's what Bhagavatam Shikshet, Guruvatma Dharvate, regarding the Guru as one's worshipable Lord and very self. And this, you know, emphasizes the relationship. There has to be this full surrender and understanding that Sakshat Hridit Vena Samasta Shastra. All the Shastras and the great Acharyas say that the Guru is non-different from Krishna and is just as worshipable. So there, then what happens? Amayana Vrityayais, by then rendering non-deceptive service, sincere service to the Guru, what happens? Tushyet Atmatmano Hari. Then the Hari, Krishna, who is the Supreme Atma, he becomes satisfied with such a disciple, and he gives himself. Atmada. Atmatmada Hari. He gives himself. So that's how we get reciprocation from Krishna through the medium of the realized souls. So the lessons go on. And ultimately in this series, there's these two wonderful verses which I have to share with you because it's all part of the same instruction. So in the process of devotional service, how do we stay enlivened? You know, over time, months and years and decades, that utsaha, that enthusiasm has to be maintained. Because, you know, Maya is very sneaky. You know, she'll infect you and gradually you can lose your enthusiasm. So he has these two verses, which I love. It says, paraspara, the devotees get together, just like we're getting together here. Right? So what do? We discuss Krishna. Paraspadanu katanam bhavanam bhagavadisha. Mutually discussing Krishna, bhavanam bhagavadisha, the glories of Bhagavan, which are very purifying. Just by hearing and chanting, you become purified. And what's the result? Mito rati matas tushti nivrita mata atmana. Then that's how you establish relationships between devotees. Those are genuine relationships based on service to Krishna and glorifying Krishna together. You see? This is where real spiritual relationships are because Krishna's in the middle. So mito ratir means then you get affection for the devotees. And mitas tushtir, you're satisfied. Mutual satisfaction, spiritual satisfaction, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, verse chapter 10. Text 9, right? That talking together, then tuchti, you experience satisfaction. And nivritimata, you also become mutually detached from maya, you know, from material things. So this glorification together, this is what sankirtan is, after all. Then the final verse, it has a very famous line in it. And he says, smanantyak smarayantyascha mito gaugaharam harim. So therefore, in mutually reminding one another of Krishna and remembering Krishna. This is what, you know, getting together and glorifying Krishna is. You're reminding each other of Krishna and yourself remembering Krishna. Smaranjik smaranjastha. And then I love this line. Mito gaugaharam harim. You're reminding each other of Hari, Krishna. Who is aga harim haram. He takes away the great flood of sin within the heart. Aga oga haram harim. And then, bhaktya samjatiya bhaktya vibhratyutpalikamtanam. So he says, thus, practicing sadhana bhakti, this is an essential part of sadhana bhakti, hearing and chanting amongst devotees, headed by sankirtan, congregational chanting. That's the essence of it. But expands into this whole Bhagavatam and everything else. So, what happens by that practice, one attains advanced bhakti. Raga bhakti, bhakti asamjadeya, that sadhana bhakti produces bhava bhakti, and then, you know, hair stands on him. Vibhutit pradikam dhanum, and he describes more, you know, ecstatic symptoms. So this all is of a piece. There's some verses in there where he describes the process of devotion that I left out. But it begins with having a very jaundiced view about material life. We have to be totally pessimistic about that. There's ultimately no happiness here. In fact, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita that happiness, that sense of pleasure, is the worst enemy of the conditioned soul or the aspiring devotee. And because it leads us to think that there's some way that we can, you know, adjust the material world and make it a place of happiness and peace. There's no way. There's no way. It's just a false promise. It's a dream. You know? I'll share with you again because I haven't been up here so long. I don't forget if I remember it last night. There's one verse. That appears five times in the Bhagavatam, with one slight variation in one of those verses. You know it's an important verse. And it's exactly to this point of how You know, how do we wake up from this dream of material life and go to the reality of Krishna's world and Krishna's service? You know, it's not a physical thing. It doesn't mean we have to get it in a rocket ship somewhere. It's a question of consciousness. So the verse is this. It's spoken by Kapila Dev twice. No, it's spoken by Krishna twice in the Uddhava Gita, Kapila Dev once and a couple other times. Arteya vidyamane pi, arte vidyamane pi, sangsutir nanivartate, dhyayato vishayam asya svapne nartagamo yatha. So what does this verse mean? It says, in truth, arte, in reality, avidyamano pi sangsutir, this samsara, this whole roiling world of birth and death and all of this stuff, is not really real. Just like Krishna says, nasato vidyate bhava. It's not what it seems, you know. So it's not actually reality, you know. Sangsuti, none of our. But the sangsuti, which means the miseries of birth and death, do not cease. In spite of the fact that they're not really ultimately real, like Krishna is real, vastava vastu, they don't cease. For one who is meditating on the objects of the senses, meditating on sense gratification, dhyayato vishayan, which is exactly the same words in the Gita. Just as, suppose you're having a nightmare, right? Well, the misery, there's no real lion in there. There's no real person trying to chop your head off, right? But as long as you're dreaming, the miseries don't cease. You see that? Swapne nartagamoyata means the anartas in the swapna, in the dream, don't cease as long as you're still dreaming. So we have to wake up from that dream. And Krishna consciousness is the process of waking up. It's difficult because we it's like anyone who's trying to run a brahmacharya ashram, you know, it's difficult to get people up. You know, they want to keep going, you know, sleep, or maybe I wake up now, but then during japa I can sleep, right? So we're so determined, you know, to try to enjoy this dream, but that's where the hearing the Bhagavatam comes in, and hearing from the great souls. As it all comes down to Sangha. This is another theme. Krishna says, Tato duk Sangha Mutsurja. Tato duk Sangha Mutsurja. Satsu Sajjaita Buddhiman. Santa Evasya Chindanti. Mono Vyasaga Muktibi. He's saying there that, therefore, again, one should give up all bad association. Because bad association means continuing the dream. Isn't it? Bad association means that, you know, you hang out with people who are in illusion, then that illusion will affect you. And or, you know, if you expose yourself to materialists, then that illusion will affect you. So I said, Duk Sangam Utsrija. Utsrija means throw it far away, reject it. Then what should we do? Satsu Sajjaita Buddhiman. The intelligent person, you have to be intelligent, will associate with the devotees. Satsu Sajjaita Buddhiman. Get an association and attachment also. And what's the advantage? They say, Santa Evasya, the saints, the devotees, Evasya Chindandi Mono Vyasaga Muktibi, with their words, with the strong words, like the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada's purports, they will cut off the very powerful desires that are within our mind. This is tato chindanti manovyasangam. Manovyasangam means the very tightly bound, you know, desires we've been cultivating for many years. Sometimes it's called like these knots, many, you know, asha pasha, many ropes are binding us to this world. So the strong words of the great devotees, which we respect and revere, and we're really willing to take that medicine, can cut off those desires and, you know, sublimate them so that they're directed toward Krishna. We don't try to repress the desire, but we do redirect the desire toward Krishna, service to his devotees, and service to the poor souls out there who never heard about Krishna, who are all God brothers and God sisters, and who need to get this knowledge by millions of books pouring down, Srila Prabhupada's books, during the month of December. So I'll read the verse again. When the great Saint Narada Muni had thus spoken, King Indra, being respectful to Narada's words, immediately released my mother. Because of my being a devotee of the Lord, all the demigods circumambulated her. Then they returned to their celestial kingdom. So, of course, Prahlada is explaining this to his friends, because they couldn't figure it out either, how he knew all this stuff. You know, what is this? We never learned this. So he's saying where he learned it, in the womb. Any comments, questions? These few points? If not, I'm going to lay a poem down on you. So, this is a new one you haven't heard. I haven't written so many new ones lately. But, you know, this, the words, you know, the words. So, our, you know, great Rasacharya, Rupa Goswami, there's such a beauty to it. You know, we have the beauty of this, of the poetry of the Sanskrit. Sometimes we can't appreciate so much because we don't speak the language, you know. But many years ago, right here in New Dwarka, there was a gentleman named Kushikrata Das. And he came here, like, I think in 77, the year Prabhupada disappeared. And he was actually a genius. He had his quirks, I think we can agree, but he was a super genius. And he taught himself Sanskrit right over there where Savas sits in his office. That was his office, I think. There was a back part of it. There was another wall in there. Anyway, so I was living here at the time. And Kushikrata was doing Sanskrit. We had a whole Sanskrit department, actually. He was part of the Sanskrit department. And I was working on the Back to Godhead, you know, like that. So eventually Kushikrata became pretty proficient in Sanskrit, and he started translating the Stavamala of Rupa Goswami. And at that time, you know, I was, you know, I loved to chant shlokas, and we had so many verses from the Chaitanya Charitamrita that were kind of just suddenly exploded when the CC kind of appeared all at once in 1975. I worked on the book also. So did Architabhu. And now suddenly all these other shlokas were started coming out. You know, Krishna was producing these verses. So the first thing he translated of Rupa Goswami's was this poem called the Mukunda Muktavali, which means a series of pearl-like verses from Mukunda is actually what it means. Mukta can also mean a pearl. So he started laying these verses down, and you know, he'd give me them like one by one, and I said, "Oh, Kusha, keep going. You know, this is a fantastic verse." So anyway, this is one of those verses. So it goes like this: it's nothing but just a beautiful, you know, meditation on Krishna. It's a way of it's like a jewel, actually, like a pearl. So, udadi kutamudadi dutabangam, navajada dadikitano rasabangam, yubati vadayatatamananatadangam, punamati yamanatatikatadangam. I'll do one more. Udadi kutamudadi dutabangam, navajada dadikitano rasabangam, yubati vadayatatamananatadangam, punamati yamanatatikatadangam. So, what it means roughly, his flute emanates entrancing sounds for the cowherd girls whose love abounds with the clever cloud complexion lord who's dancing upon the Kavindi shore. There's no philosophy there. It's just Krishna, you know. So this is our heritage. These are the you know, Tadvag Visargo. These are the sounds. These are the sounds that'll enchant our minds away from Maya. You know, the English? Okay. His flute emanates entrancing sounds for the cowherd girls whose love abounds with a clever cloud complexion lord who's dancing upon the Kalindi shore. And actually, I couldn't get everything in the Sanskrit into the English, but what he's saying there is, it's an imperative. He's saying, now you should bow down. Bow down to that cloud complexion lord who's dancing upon. Pranamata means it's imperative like that. So does, you know, Srila Prabhupada has poured that, it says, what is that? That's that third verse of the Goswamashtaka. Shri Gauranga Gunarna Varnana Vado Shraddhasa Vidhyam Vado Papo Tapata Kuntanota Navatam Govinda Ganamritai. Right? So Papo Tapata Kuntano means that they're cutting off, they're destroying the great sufferings that the people are feeling due to their grievous sins. Papo Tapa Nakuntano. How are they doing it? By pouring down nectarian songs about Govinda. Govinda Ganamritai literally means like that. Nectarian. So these are, you know, this is our heritage. We should take advantage of it. Read to each other. Open the nectar of devotion. Remember Vijayatatma? He used to roam these streets. with a book bag, and in the book bag was a nectar of devotion. And when he would see the devotee, he'd say, Babu, you know, listen to this. You know, he'd whip it out, and it's so much wonderful thing, the nectar of devotion. You know, you know, it starts with this wonderful poetry, Rupa Goswami. Another one from the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, you know, which we have. I didn't put it into a poet, English poem, but it's so beautiful. Describing Krishna's first stage of his Kumara age. You know, it's not just Kumara, Paganda, Kishora. There's also stages within them. So the first stage is when Krishna is just crawling along, you know, in the courtyard, wearing nothing but a belt of golden, you know, bells, and a pearl in his nose, you know, and a fresh ball of butter, you know. So he's describing Krishna like that. So, you know, it's very profound. This is the Supreme Personality of God. And he's with his mother. So he says, what is it? Konata kanaka king kanika lapam. Smita muka mundula nasika gurumuktam. Kadadita navanita pinda mangre tanayama vekshin ananda nanda patni. Isn't that a wonderful word? Nananda Nanda Patni. Nanda Patni, of course, the wife of Nanda Maharaj. Nananda means she's delighted. She's blissed out, you know. Did you know there's a word in English called ecstasize? Not exercise, ecstasize. It means to put someone into ecstasy or to go into ecstasy. Don't we need that word? That's a good word for us. So she's ecstasized by seeing her little son. So what it says is, Konata kanaka kinkanika lapam. So it means that he's wearing these golden bells around his waist, which are tinkling very sweetly. Konata kanaka kinkanika lapam. Smitamukam, beautiful smiling face. Udjula nasikagramuktam, on the tip of his nose is affixed in effulgent pearl. That's it. And then kadajita namanita pindam. In his hand, he's holding a fresh butterball. You see? And he's coming before his mother and smiling in this way, and she's bliss, you know, feeling bliss, and of course, you know, the milk is flowing and like that. So isn't this the mood? I mean, there's probably 100 or 500 million of those little statues throughout India of pious Vaishnava ladies who have the little Krishna coming and crawling and looking at you. Isn't it? It's probably a bunch of them in the ashram here. That's the mood. Anyway, so I encourage you to take advantage of these gifts that we've been given. Bhagavatam, you know. Bhama, bhama, hokata, bhama. There's so many beautiful shlokas. Yes? I'm sorry, Prabhu? Oh, Sarangataka. I'm sorry. Okay, Sarangataka. Yes, I actually found Sarangatakur in the Samadhi's book, and we'll read this little blurb about Saranga Thakur. This is from Mahanidhi Maharaj's book. An important branch of the Sri Chaitanya tree, this is his disappearance day, by the way, an important branch of the Sri Chaitanya tree, Sri Saranga Thakur, Saranga Murari, lived in Mam Gachi, Moda Drumadweep, in Navadweep. Staying under a bakula tree, Saranga Thakur worked hard every day to please his worshipable deity. Single-handedly, he would collect fruits, vegetables, and firewood. He would also beg rice, cook, bathe, dress, and feed his lord. After a full day of deity service, Saranga would cross the Ganges River to join Mahaprabhu's Harinam Sankirtan party in Mayapur. During one visit, Lord Gauranga noticed that Saranga's beloved bakula tree was drying up and was almost dead. Lord Chaitanya embraced the tree with his beautiful golden arms. Completely rejuvenated, the tree burst forth with green leaves and fresh, super fragrant flowers. To this day, devotees of Lord Chaitanya worship this special Kalpa Vriksha tree of Sridhar Mayapur. Some devotees collect small pieces of wood which occasionally fall off and make neck beads or worship it. So if you go on Navadvipa Parikram, you'll come to this place and see the tree. Saranga Thakur vowed to never initiate any disciples, despite Lord Chaitanya's insistence that he should do so. One day he relented, and he decided to initiate the first person that he saw. While bathing in the Ganges, he brushed against a floating corpse. Suddenly it sprang to life. Stunned, the man slowly identified himself and bowed down to Saranga Thakur, who had just miraculously renewed his life. He initiated him. After giving him mantra diksha, Saranga Thakur became famous as Saranga Murari Thakur because the disciple's previous name was Murari. Now, isn't this Murari? Wasn't he the one who would bow down and melt stones? I think later on. They slapped the tigers, right? Right, right. Hare Krishna. So, in Vrajalila, Saranga serves Radha Gopinath as Nandi Mukhi Sakhi. By taking a 45-minute rickshaw ride from downtown Navadvip, you can still see the deity of Saranga Thakur and the Kalpa Vriksha Bakula tree. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.